Good evening, everybody. It's Monday, December 10th, 9:09. I don't know if John is here or not. John's been ill. He asked if I would take over, although I do see he looks like he's in the queue, so I don't know if he's going to come in and speak tonight or not. Hang on a minute. We usually have a Bible reading, which I didn't prepare for. Let me see if I can. I don't know where he left off reading. If I did, I would pick up from there, but I don't. So, just bear with me a minute. I'll pick a... a Bible passage here to read. I'll read chapter 66 of Isaiah, which this has nothing to do with where John was reading, but this is what I'll pick up for. Thus saith the Lord, heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. What is this house that you will build to me, and what is this place of my rest? My hand made all these things, and all these things were made, saith the Lord. But to whom I shall have respect, but to him that is poor and little, and again a contrite spirit, and that trembleth at my words. He sacrifices an ox as if he slew a man, and he killeth a sheep in sacrifice as if he should brain a dog. He that offereth an oblation as if he should offer a swine's blood. He that remembereth incense as if he should bless an idol. All these things they have chosen in their ways, and their soul is delighted in their abominations. Wherefore, I will also choose their mockeries, and I will bring upon them the things they feared. Because I called, and there was none that would answer. I have spoken, and they have heard not. And they have done evil in my eyes, and have chosen the things that displeaseth me. Hear the word of the Lord, you that tremble at his word. Your brethren that hate you and cast you out for my name's sake have said, let the Lord be glorified, and we shall see in your joy, but they shall be confounded. A voice of the people from the city, a voice from the temple, the voice of the Lord rendereth recompense to his enemies. Before she was in labor, and she brought forth, before her time it came to be delivered, she brought forth a man-child. Who had ever heard of such a thing? And who had seen the like to this? Shall the earth bring forth in one day, or a nation be brought forth at once, because Sion had been in labor, had brought forth her children? Shall I not make others to bring forth children myself, bring forth, saith the Lord? Shall I that give generation to others be barren, saith the Lord thy God? Rejoice with Jerusalem, and be glad with her, all you that love her. Rejoice for joy with her, all ye that mourn for her, and that you may suck and be filled with the breast of her consolations, that you may milk out and flow with her delights in the abundance of her glory. For thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring upon her as if it were a river of peace, as an overflowing torrent, the glory of the Gentiles, which you shall suck and shall be carried at the breasts. And upon the knees they shall caress you. As one whom the mother caresseth, so I will comfort you, and you shall be comforted in Jerusalem. I will see your heart, and your heart you shall see, and your heart shall rejoice, and your bones shall flourish like a herb. At the hand of the Lord shall be known to his servants, and he shall be angry with his enemies. And that's chapter 66, verse 1 through 14. Okay. Let's get started here. I don't think John is here. Jan, are you at the console? I don't know if you have any announcements to do tonight. Is Jan here? First of all, can everybody hear me? I hope everybody can hear me. I wasn't going to go through all that for nothing. How about...
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. So, I don't know if Jan is here. I don't know that we have any announcements. I'll give him a minute or two. I don't.
Jan is here. He's muted.
Let's unmute him then.
Everybody is on hold, it looks like. I think we need to take everybody off hold.
Is that what the problem is?
Yes.
Okay.
Recorded.
There we go.
Now we have lots of people.
There we go. I don't
Thank
know if
you.
They can hear me on.
Yeah, but we're off hold.
Okay, I don't know if you could hear me before, but John has been ill, and he asked me to take over the show. I thought he was in there earlier, but I guess if he's going to talk, he'll break in. And Jan, if you have any announcements, go ahead. I did a Bible reading. I don't know if you guys could hear because it was on hold. I don't know what hold means.
I'm not sure. I was on a telephone call. I just got off.
Oh.
Yes, I do have questions, and I also would like to stress that we still need grand jury administrators. We're only up to like 1,035 out of 13,000. So if you're sitting on the fence and thinking about would you like to be a grand jury administrator, or you've been talking to people about it, or maybe you could talk to people about it to convince them to come over and take a look and join up with us, so we would greatly appreciate it. On the same vein, we need volunteer callers for the welcome committee. That's a continuing need. We picked up a few, but we need many more to make it fly. And we do have a meeting tomorrow night at 9 Eastern in this room, Monday night room, to go over ways and means to move things along a little more rapidly here. I think we're getting behind the eight ball. Also, we need some volunteers to staff a new committee to arrange interviews for John and Gerard. Now, we had a volunteer, I believe it was Connie from Connecticut, that was investigating, I believe it was X-22, Breitbart, and one other. And we definitely need that capability. And I sent her an email a couple, three, four, 5 days ago, and I haven't heard anything back, so I don't know what the status on that is, but we could definitely use more people there. And we're running low on speakers for the natural healing call. This entails talking for 35 to 45 minutes about your favorite non-traditional healing technique. Anything but allopathic medicine is appropriate. And plan on 35 to 45 minute talk with time for Q&A after that. And lately, we've been running over a little bit, so we've been cutting into the 9 o'clock meeting on Thursday nights. The natural healing call is 8 o'clock Eastern on Thursday nights. So if you know of anyone that would like to speak, or you yourself decide that you'd like to get a little exercise and practice speaking, let me know, and we'd be glad to host you. Just send me an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.com. And that's about the extent of the announcements. If you're ready for questions, I do have three questions for you, Gerard or Brent or whoever is on the line. John is in, but I haven't seen him sign in to speak yet. So the first...
So fire away.
Okay. The first John would know about, I'm sure. It says, I was just offered an opportunity to subcontract. In your opinion, will a DBA or doing business as... be sufficient to shield me from personal liability, or should I just incorporate? Everything that I have read says incorporate, but I don't want to consult a lawyer because I already know what they're going to say. I would prefer not to incorporate. I want to keep things simple. I want to streamline the whole payroll process. It's a job within a job to keep track of all of these moving parts. So what would you recommend?
Well, that's a good question. You know, a DBA doesn't shield you at all from personal liability. So somebody can sue you and get your business and even your house and your bank account and things like that. That's why people like to incorporate. And a popular one is the LLC, which is the Limited Liability Corporation, which I don't profess to be an expert about, but I think the best way to figure that is that if you have a lot to lose, the more you have to lose, the more protection you need. Look, you could operate under a DBA, and you could cover yourself with liability insurance and make sure you have enough liability that you're not going to lose your house or something in case, God forbid, something happens. I mean, you never know what's going to happen, but you try to carry enough insurance. You know, a corporation is supposed to shield you much deeper than that, though, because now you as the person are not liable, only the corporation, so they can only go so far. It's a personal decision, your own decision. I've operated my own business under a DBA for years, but, you know, I don't have a whole bunch of assets that I'm worried about. You know what I mean, that anybody would come after me for. So, I mean, there's a fine line between becoming insurance poor. And, of course, if you have a lot of insurance, you might be a bigger target to be sued. You know, nothing from nothing is nothing. So if you keep things small, you're not such a big target. But really, in business, if you ask an accountant, you ask a lawyer, they're going to tell you do the LLC. That's the biggest, best protection. Everybody I know that's in business, the majority of them use LLCs, but I can't tell you personally what the best way to go. It's you know, it depends on what your assets are and what you stand to lose. And, you know, it's not a difficult process, but, I mean, John likes to use trust, and he could answer that better because he prefers the putting things in a trust, which is also a protection and is very hard to penetrate. So that's something you would want to ask John when he's here about the advantage to a trust as opposed to a corporation or a limited liability. And there are advantages and there are disadvantages. But that's the extent of what I know, which is, you know, I am definitely not an expert, and I would consult, you know, a lawyer or an accountant, you know, that knows what my assets were, what kind of money I had, and take that advice under consideration, and then decide from there. I hope I answered that well enough.
Yeah, good. Okay, the next one concerns a problem from Greensburg, Pennsylvania, just east of Pittsburgh. Had a sheriff down there who was charged with using his deputies to help run his campaign, and according to some of the text that went with it, he had them out actively doing things that most of them didn't want to do, and he was harassing them and, you know, giving them a lot of grief, and this was on company time. So they brought him up on charges. Well, make a long story short, the jury deliberated. They came up with two charges. He was counted in our two counts. He was charged with more than that, apparently, but they dropped it back to two, and the jury said they signed a sheet for guilty. So they were called back in, and when the verdict was read, the defense attorney says he didn't believe that. He wanted to have a spoken individual count from the jury members. I've never heard of that, but I'm not big on jury proceedings. So the judge asked each individual jury, how did he vote? Well, they came to juror number six, and everybody else up to that point had been saying guilty, but juror number six voted for not guilty. So the judge sent them back to deliberate, and after about a half an hour, they came out and said they couldn't reach a verdict, so now it's a mistrial. So what is the rule, regulations for that sort of thing? I'd never heard of anything like that. Any idea?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. Today, it seems like they do whatever they want. You know, years ago, if the jury actually was hung, that was it. It was a hung jury. They didn't go back. I don't think they even called it a mistrial. You had to have a unanimous decision, or basically it was innocent. Today, if they can't reach a decision, you may send them back once or twice, but then they get to do a new trial. So that's what's going to happen in this case, apparently, that they'll retry it again. So I don't know when they change that or how or what, but, you know, like I said, a lot of times they even have judges overturning jury decisions, which is unheard of. So I don't know what to tell you. That's not constitutional. The jury, a court of record, which a jury trial is supposed to be the last word that even the Supreme Court can't overturn. So what separate municipalities are doing, God only knows. That's part of the problem in the country right now. They're not living by the rule of law. And really, hardly anything gets to a jury trial because they don't want that. They want to settle out of court. They don't want to make a record. A jury trial is a court of record, and there's a record. And you know, you can kind of rest in it and use it as precedent. So they do whatever they can to make sure something doesn't have a jury trial, in my experience. So, you know, as far as this sheriff goes, it sounds to me like if it's a mistrial, they're going to have to try it again. They're going to have to pick a new jury, and they're going to have to go through all that motion again. So I don't know. That's my what I know about it. That's
okay.
It.
Okay. Yep. The next question. This person participated in a deposition, I believe, last week, Wednesday. And she was advised to preserve the integrity of her answers and protect herself against any unnecessary invasion of privacy. So she did the best she could without being represented by an attorney. Now, she started at 10 in the morning, and this went on till 7 o'clock at night. And after about
and
7...
That was a deposition, you said?
A deposition, yes.
My
and after about...
Like a
inquisition.
An inquisition, exactly.
After about 7, the opposing attorney made a statement to the plaintiff that she was going to suspend the deposition because he refused to answer her questions. And she said that she was going to file a motion because I wasn't telling my personal business. It seems like the better I performed, the more pissed off the attorney became. I believe that she's using a tactic so that she can take this deposition all over again. What steps can I take to avoid this from happening?
Boy, I don't know the answer to that one as far as deposition. I mean, somebody like Brent that has deposed people would know more about that. That's a legal procedure that I have not studied or been part of. John probably knows more about it since he's, you know, done some of the law stuff on his own. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they depose. There's rules. There's certain questions you can and can't ask at a deposition because it's an inquiry on a narrow scale. I'm going to say, you know what I mean. It's not supposed to be a fishing expedition. So there are some limits on the type of questions they can ask, but you know, how do you go from you know 8 hours or 10, 12 hours on something like that? Where at some point you would think you're crossing a line. So I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know how you prevent that. I mean, maybe John knows more about depositions, but I really don't know.
Okay, maybe when Brent gets on, or John comes on, maybe we can hit them with both of these questions again.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit off the beaten track.
Look, the other thing we don't know is it was she the target of the suit? You know what I'm saying? I mean,
I think
they
she
can't
file the suit.
Oh, she filed the suit.
I think so. She doesn't actually say so. But
yeah, because it makes a difference as far right. as what's going on in the case here. You know, what are they deposing her for? And you know, you can plead the fifth on stuff on certain things, but if you're not the subject of the investigation and you're not going to incriminate yourself, I don't know that you can sit there and plead the fifth when they're asking you questions about your knowledge on a certain thing. You know, So I don't know. Somebody like Brent would be much better at that than myself. I haven't been to many depositions, and I don't know what the rules are. So I'll have to defer.
Okay, that was the last question that I had. I see we have one entry into the queue.
Yep, that's Crystal. Hang on, let me see if I can open her up. I know she was trying to get a hold of me this week, and I was very, very crazy. Hang on here. I'm going to open Crystal up and get her in here right away.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yes.
Hi, how you doing?
No, just peachy.
Okay, I've been up since 5 o'clock, and I said, "Let me just get it over and done with, because I'm exhausted." But anyways,
yeah.
I had to go to court today, and remember, I told you last week when I did the affidavit, and the 6 questions, and I amended 2 more, and I said, I am the sole owner of my property. I will not vacate or move from my property. And then I forgot the last one. But anyways, I believe I sent it over to you. So when I sent it on last Monday, I had given them the 30 days. And then something said, go back and file it again, and I'm going to give them 3 days. But on those, that question, I said, I give you 30 days to 3 days to respond. That same letter, that affidavit I had, I filed it on my property deed. So I paid the $60 or whatever, to have it recorded. So I got the volume and page. Matter of fact, I just got it back today, so I did that on December 6th. I faxed it over to the court, the chief judge, chief attorney, chief clerk, and the three groups of attorneys that were involved. And today when I went to court, no one showed up again. So she said, is there anyone in here? I didn't call their name. So she saw everybody, they were talking to me. So I raised my hand because I have difficulty getting up and stuff. And then she called me and I said, I am the authorized representative. Then I gave my name and agent. And I said, Your Honor, for the record, I am a living soul with blood going through my veins. And I would like, and no one owns me. Or, you know, something to that effect. And I said, and I would like you to give me a remedy. You know, what is your remedy? And she just looked at me, and the attorneys all looked at me, and she goes, well, you're not even supposed to be here. I don't know why you came in here today. I said, because you sent the letter and objected my objection from November 5th, stating that you will not authorize or whatever you went with the other party. And by the way, Your Honor, you did not sign off. I said they have been perpetrating a fraud. I said also I sent you the amendment, the foreign exchange of 1938, which no one is registered, so therefore they do not have the jurisdiction. And secondly, under the IR code, the Internal Revenue Code, the penalty of perjury, there was no legal documents proving their case under the subrogation. She goes, but you didn't have to be here. We didn't rule. I said, no. And you also stated that on the 19th of January, I would have to be out of my house. So before I went up to the court this morning, I did another objection for motion of default, perpetrating fraud, mortgage fraud, no due process. And then on top of it, I wrote treason. And I never put that on any of them. But on all the paperwork today, it's treason. Okay? I sent it to them. She goes, You can leave. You can. You don't have to be here. You don't have to be here. But I said, because she said, well, but you, I said, oh, you have the documents from the from December 3rd, December 6th, and December 10th today. So it's already scanned in, so you know exactly what's in my file. And by the way, they were taking evidence and pulling it out, which is it's criminal. She had nothing to say. Also, the letter that Richard Blumenthal, Senator Blumenthal, stated that he's ashamed of his state and that the judicial system, the federal, superior, and appellate court, is like a growing cancer in our court system. So now he's backpedaling, you know. So in other words, they're all on their own. On the meeting for last week up in Hartford, Connecticut, there was a few. They said, one guy said, oh, there wasn't hardly no one that showed up. He said they were outside picketing, and it was about 10 people. I said, why on earth were you outside when it was in the frigid cold? Why wasn't you inside taking notes on the questions and answers so we could do the rebuttal? And so the other lady called me last night. She said it was a large crowd. So I said, that's great. So they want to do a TV segment, and we're also going to try to get a group together again. And maybe if we could meet you halfway or whatever the case is. And this time, anybody who got the phones, we're going to blow everything out on YouTube. Because, and we're going to have maybe two TV stations. And basically that's all. But I was in and out of court today, and I will follow the rest of the stuff tomorrow. And I just got the other affidavit back from when I amended the whole thing. So.
Right.
That's but
so they're having hearings that you're not invited to.
Mm-hmm.
They're having hearings that you're not supposed to be at. Is that what they're telling you? I mean, what are they doing out there? What are they? You said nobody showed up. They were supposed to have a hearing, and you were
They had a rally in Hartford, Connecticut, at the state capitol.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you showed up at court, and she said you're not supposed
today.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on at that hearing, and she doesn't want you there? It pertains to you, does it not?
Right. But see, what happened, different people were talking to me, and she doesn't want me to basically talk to any of them, you know, because last week she had me there. I was there from 9:30 until 10:05, but I was with another person. And she figured I was helping her out. So when she saw me in court today, she's like, oh, no. We got to get her out. Even, you know, because everybody always comes to me and asks me questions and stuff like that.
Yeah, so she's got you targeted. Okay, I understand. Okay, thank you, Crystal.
She was very cordial, but as I said, you know what? That don't fly with me, you know, because
right.
Here you are sitting there trying to take my property. And she was the one that said, you're not going to like my answer, but January 19th, we are taking your house. I just looked at it. Oh, thank you. That was a few months ago. But again, today, they did not show up again. And I said, they're in default. So I got the paperwork, and today was Saturday was day three, because according to Connecticut's laws, when you're filing for bankruptcy or whatever, they include the weekends as those days. So you got 14 days, so they can include Monday through Sunday, and again. So I use that right back on them, so I gave them the 3 days. So if they wanted to use Saturday as the third day or today, but I didn't get any answer. So I remember what you said. I need to go back and do an affidavit on default.
Right, motion for default, right.
A motion for default. So I got to get that done because I just got my car back today. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Crystal. Good luck, and keep us informed.
All righty. Will do.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to continue. We have a couple other people in the queue. I don't know if Brent is here yet or not, but we can pick up with him if he comes in. But I'm going to go to the next person in the queue for now, moving right along. And that looks like Chris from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, hi.
That's who you are. Hey.
Yeah, I took the government by consent course. And I thought it was something longer than that. Is that the only one? It was something like about 6 parts to it.
I don't know for sure if that's the only one or if it's even done yet.
No,
he's still working on it.
Yeah, there's only 6 chapters now. I think there's 15 total.
Right.
And we're in the process of finishing those up, and they all get installed as soon as we get done with them.
Right.
Oh, okay. And I went to take the civics course today, but the only access I have is my smartphone, and it said I needed the Adobe Flash player, and my phone wouldn't accept that, so I'll have to go use a computer at the library to do that one. That one, the civics course, that's just for jury administrator, grand jury administrator.
No. That's for anybody. Anybody can take it. As a matter of fact, we encourage everybody to take it.
No, I mean for the jury administrator. That's
jury administrator. Jury administrators, we want them to take the Constitution course as well as the civics course.
Okay.
When I did the government by consent.
Hang on a minute. What, Jan?
When we did the government by consent course, we incorporated the Constitution course in that. So now you only have to take the civics course and the Constitution course. Excuse me, the government by consent course. You only have to take the 2.
Right.
No longer necessary unless you've already taken the Constitution course. That's fine, but you don't have to take it if you haven't. It's incorporated in the new course.
Oh, is the Constitution course still available on there, though? Can somebody take it if they want?
I'll check it for you. I'm not sure whether it's still up there. I assume it is, but
I would think we should leave it up there until we get the government by consent course done, finished.
It says free Constitution course, so you should be able to take it if you want. Still there.
Right. So if somebody hasn't taken it, I would encourage them to take it. As far as being brushed up on the Constitution, because I don't know how much of the Constitution is in that government by consent yet with the 6 chapters, But go ahead, Chris. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just signed up. I was looking for the committee man job. On the civics, it mentioned grand jury administrator. But I wasn't sure which one I'd want to do. I didn't want to get into something like the grand jury administrator full-time job. But what would that be? Is it like 40 hours? I said 40 hours a week. Is that 8 hours a day? Are you in an office? You have to be there that much? Or are you just like on call? It usually amounts to 40 hours? Or what that really is?
Well, I think it depends on what area you're in as far as how much work it would be. A bigger populated area is going to have more work. You know what I mean? We figured 4 administrators to a county, but some of the bigger counties are going to need more than that. They might need 8 or 16 even, if it's a big county. Now, as far as how much work it's going to be, it'll be a paid position, and you'll be administrating, and you'll be picking jurors and doing a lot of stuff. I don't know that, there's going to be – I don't think anybody's checking hours. There's certain work that needs to be done. It's more like a salary position than it is an hourly position, you know? I mean, and you know what happens with that. You know? You know you'll be putting a lot of hours in.
The reason they pay salaries because you're going to put a lot more than your salary.
Right, and especially in the beginning to get the system up and running. You know, I mean, basically, the grand jury administrator, you know, the first ones, there's a lot of work to be done there because we're not reinventing the wheel, but we're re-breaking, you know, we're resurrecting old ground that used to be there and putting it back in. You know, it was not unusual for a grand jury to do an investigation, but they've got them. They've got them denuded, so to speak, today, the juries and the grand jury. So we're going to free them, and that's going to take some work, you know, and administering to them. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know how often, if you look and see how often the jury and the grand jury in your county meet, and depending on the size of the county, if you had four, just think if you had four administrators and you had to divide that work up between the four of you, you could get some kind of idea about what the job's going to be like, you know.
Well, I've called in before and I've asked about, and maybe I didn't put the question right, but I said I don't understand about the grand juries.
You can't call the county.
Where do I find it at? Apparently there's not an office in the courthouse that has it.
Well, first of all, these positions
from my hearing is that the judges are trying to keep the public from the grand jury and what? You know, I mean, how do I reach them, find them? What, you know.
You're going to have a lot of trouble if you go in there asking where the grand jury is, because that's going to be the world's best kept secret, and they're not going to want to talk to you. These administrator positions, this is something that we've come up with ourselves at NLA that we believe that is going to be necessary to implement the system and to train people into it. You know, in order to get the grand jury system functioning the way it was meant to from the beginning. So we know there's money there. They're paying the county clerks and these other people's salaries to administer to the juries and the grand juries. And you know, the courts have a lot of money here and there, and we figure that's where the money's going to come from when we become into power. So,
well, say, for instance, I did apply for the grand jury administrator or just to be a member of the grand jury. Now, how do I, you know, if it's hidden, you know,
well,
I'm the grand jury administrator. Now I want to start work, and who do I ask where I go to work at?
Right now, the job is not there. If you go to the court and say, I want to be a grand jury administrator, they're going to look at you like you got three heads.
That's what I mean.
Because the DAs run it, the DAs and whoever the county appoints. Like in my county here, the county clerk used to run it. It was an extra job for him to do. You know, and
that was another thing. Is it like the DA is the grand jury now in a lot of places?
Pretty much, and that's a conflict of interest. If you can see why.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's administering to him and he's prosecuting, and that's where you get the statement that he can indict a ham sandwich. Well, because he's controlling the whole process, and he's picking and choosing who's going to be on the grand jury. And you know, with the questionnaires they have today, you know, they're practically psychoanalyzing you and running a profile on you before they pick you. They're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to be picked at random. The best thing that they can do is make sure that you're a peer of the person being tried. You know what I mean? That you live in the community and you know, you're actually supposed to know the person. They always ask, they always say, oh, do you know the person? You need to recuse yourself. That's not the way it used to be. It used to be that they pick people in the community. Everybody in a small town knows everybody anyway. What are you going to tell me, that they can't be jurors and grand jurors in their own community because everybody knows each other? You want people that know you to be on your jury and your grand jury, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're going to get a bunch of strangers, then what's it going to depend on? It's going to depend on the baloney that the DA feeds you about the person then, right?
Yeah.
as far as how you're going to, you know, what's a jury of your peers all about anyway? Your peers are your neighbors, your friends, your workers, the people in your community and in your area and your culture, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, anyway, once the course is done, I know this ain't going to be not within the next week, I don't know, months or whatever, but what's the next procedure, next step?
Well, all along the way, we're trying to get in the courts. We're trying to reinstitute the grand jury in the court. Let me tell you what, if that happens tomorrow, if you applied to be a jury administrator, whether you took the course or you didn't take the course, if you're the only one in the county and let's say it takes off and we need administrators tomorrow, well, then guess what? You're it, and it's up to you to get your on-the-job training, so to speak.
But how do I do that?
Well, that's what these courses are designed to help you do. Look, it's very easy to do because it's common sense. If you know the Constitution and you know how the government operates, you know your civics, it'll be very easy for you because you just you're going to take that knowledge and move forward into the court, and we're going to have a – they have books right now for grand juries and juries that they hand out, that they give you when you get picked for a jury. And I mean,
oh, okay, well, that would be helpful.
Well, right now, the book that the federal grand juries get was written by Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch.
Uh-oh.
Or not Loretta Lynch, the other one there, Janet Reno. So you can imagine what that book says. You know, this is what we need to fix. That's the problem with the juries and the grand juries, is that they got all this misinformation in there, you know. And as a matter of fact, you know, a lot of what they're doing is tainting the jury and the grand jury. They got a lot of fraud going on basically because of the way it's operated, you know. So that's what we're trying to fix. You know, we want an unfettered grand jury. You know what they call an unfettered grand jury today?
What?
They're afraid of unfettered grand juries because a grand jury can investigate anything. They don't need – have you read U.S. versus Williams, which is kind of what spurred us into this whole movement? It's on our website. Go up and look and read Judge Scalia's dicta on where he explained what a jury and grand jury do and how they are to function, and how they're, even though they work in the court, they're separate from the courts, and they can't tell them how they come together. Now, this was from Scalia, very powerful stuff, and they don't want that. They don't want we the people policing them, and that's exactly what this is. You know,
oh, I know.
Grand juries used to write prescriptions. In other words, let's say something didn't rise to the level of a crime that they could indict on, but they could go into a government agency or arm or whatever, and they would investigate what was going on there, and if they found things weren't quite right, they would write a prescription and say, you need to fix this, this, and that. And they don't like that. They actually complain. You can read their own writings and say, oh, well, that's insulting to the public official, this, that. Insulting? Because the people found that they're not doing their job right? I mean, what's that all about?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's one of the biggest things that's wrong in this country. That's why we're not getting justice. You know, I mean, juries.
Well, that's why I want to be a part of this.
Yeah, look, jury should be
practicing. Yeah, I always figure, you can run your mouth, but I want to stand and be counted.
You know, one of the things that, one of the biggest ways of the people participating in the government and consenting or not to the government is through jury nullification. And when you go on a jury today, they will tell you that you can't nullify anything. Right there, they're committing treason, right there. That's the people saying to it. If they think the law is being misapplied or it's a bad law, they could say not guilty, even if the evidence shows red-handed that the guy committed the crime. You see, everything's
like you said, the judge will even overrule the jury. What do you do?
Where does that come from?
And then he's got all the men with guns to back him up.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, if our sheriffs our law enforcement officials really knew what the Constitution was, they wouldn't back those judges up. They would turn around and arrest them.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was down at the courthouse today. I'm in the process of backtracking my deed, you know, look for the original land patent. So I stopped by the I downloaded your sheriff's handbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it on a flash disk. So I stopped by the sheriff's office. And I was going to give him a copy. I told him what you're doing, you know, with the hand, the 20 handbooks and things. And he said he's going to check out the website, you know, and said he could find that sheriff's handbook there, you know, and learn all about it. And told him what, you know, the organization here, and it was free, but, you know, if he felt it was worthwhile, you know, he can donate a little. And I told him about the conference call. He may be listening right now. But he sounds like a good man from what I've heard. I think, you know, he's got real civic-minded. I think he'd be a patriot. So I don't know what the situation is at our courthouse, but starting things, you know, I think the sheriff would be a big help here. If we can get the rest of the sheriffs.
What county is that?
Clearfield.
Say again?
Clearfield.
Oh, Clearfield.
Clearfield
County. I've heard good things about him.
Hmm. Yeah, I heard he got this posse together. A friend of mine's in it, and he told me about it. I don't know much about it. I guess, you know, if someone gets lost or something, they get together and do a search thing, and I don't know what all they do, but they said, I heard about that. I figured this guy would be real civic-minded and, you know, a patriot, so... This one guy wanted to let him know about National Liberty Alliance and, you know, the sheriff's handbook and stuff.
Look, at as far as we're concerned, the sheriff is the most powerful law enforcement official. He's the number one because he's the only elected law enforcement official in an area, and so therefore he's the top cop. Now, if you listen to mainstream media and ideas, they've had sheriffs that went in and arrested people and caught them doing a crime, and they overturned the conviction because they said the sheriff doesn't have police powers like regular police. Can you imagine that? And some states had to pass laws to give the sheriff's department peace officer status, which is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of. I mean, the sheriff's supposed to be the top. You know, when the Fed comes in, technically if the sheriff says you're not coming to my county, they have to listen to him, you know? So... they're so
if we
backwards.
Got them obeying the law. I mean,
well,
we got a rogue government.
Sheriff Mack went to the Supreme Court when they tried to dictate to him what he should do. I think with the Brady Bill, and he won. And that wasn't that long ago. You know what I mean? That was back in whatever it was, 69 or 70 or something like that. I don't remember exactly. But it's not like it's ancient history or anything. You know, it's a recent win, basically. So anyway, you know, the more you can get your sheriffs involved, the better. And they're basically trying to make sheriffs a glorified delivery boy for the courts, is basically, you know.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that this whole, what we're doing should help cure that, too.
Yeah.
Here in... Pennsylvania, some time ago, they stripped the sheriffs of that power of arrest. And I think it was 2 years ago they tried to bring it back, but it didn't pass through the legislature.
Yeah, I heard something about it, that they wanted the sheriff's deputies, they wanted to be able to arrest people. And I didn't hear any more about it, didn't know what happened. Yeah, that's what it did then.
As far as I know, it didn't pass the legislature.
But also, does it need to? I mean, he has the right to do that, right? He doesn't need them to pass it, would he?
Well, that's true, but he'll run into a lot of grief if he does in this.
Well, like I said, they overturned a conviction because the sheriff did the arrest.
Yep, exactly.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, how can you take away the police powers of the sheriff and not take police powers everybody else away? And look at the sheriffs receive the same training that other police and peace officers do. It's no different. Sometimes it's even more extensive. So what are they saying? Look, I can make an arrest, a citizen's arrest, And I don't need anybody's permission to do that, do I?
No.
So, but what makes them think they
can? Apparently the problem is the judges.
Well, no, the legislators didn't vote it back in. I mean, you'd think the legislators would know better. Why wouldn't they want a sheriff to have arrest powers? That's ridiculous. You got all this money invested in cars and guns and uniforms and training and this and that, but you can't arrest anybody? I've never heard anything so ridiculous in all my life.
Yep, they just want process servers.
Apparently.
No, that's all.
So I don't know what's the matter with Pennsylvania legislators, but they obviously, you know, are confused when it comes to the issues. If you're going to vote that a sheriff doesn't have police powers, then what's the next step? Make sure that nobody else has them?
Well, you keep the own little guys that you've got under your thumb and give them the authority. Then the sheriff is no longer the most powerful in the county.
Right, because he's elected, so that makes him for and by and of the people, and they can't stand that. They got to have somebody who's appointed that they can hold the job over his head, right? You can't fire an elected official, right?
No.
So therein is the problem, isn't it? You hit the nail on the head, I think, Jan.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I'm going to get off here. I'll let someone else in the queue get on.
Okay.
Thanks for talking to
me. Yeah. Go ahead, Jan. You were saying something. Finish up.
I looked up the government by consent course, and as far as it is up through Chapter 6, that was the Declaration of Independence. Chapter 7 is the Constitution. That includes the preamble and the first seven articles. Chapter 8 is the Bill of Rights. Chapter 9 is the rest of the amendments, 11 through 27. So it's all going to be covered in great detail in the course when it gets done, and that's what John's working on right now. So hopefully that'll be up soon. We can move on through the course.
Okay. Thank you for that, Jan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to open up the Ginger from Texas. You've been open.
Hi.
Go ahead. How you doing?
Fabulous. Thank you for asking. And my question was precisely Chris's. I was a little surprised to get to the end of what I thought was the course, and then it said under construction. Then I saw that there were nine more courses or sections, I guess, to finish, and my question is, when's it going to be? I mean, I'm waiting with bated breath here to finish as Chris. So I would like a time frame. I'm like 72 and.
Well, it's not going to be that much longer, but. You know, originally we had a civics course and a constitution course.
I understand all that, and I've taken both of those. I've been with you guys for some years now, and I just want an answer. When am I going to get the rest of the course? And so I'll leave it at that. And let you answer. I do expect an answer. Now, another thing I want to make you aware of, these 9/11 folks, they had petitioned the New York courts. That's in your neck of the woods. I guess that's where John and you guys submit all your stuff. They had asked for a new investigation into 9/11, and then just a few days ago, LC for 9/11 got a letter back from the U.S. attorney agreeing to comply with a federal law requiring submission to a special grand jury of report by the lawyers committee. So that's what's happening. They had filed a petition asking for the federal grand jury, and it's happening. So I can shoot that on to you. So that's how it happens. I guess because they're attorneys or whatever, that's how they got it done. So I'll shoot that on over to you, and I think it should be put on the website so you guys can see that. So, you know, that's how it gets done. You just petition, and then they have to call the grand jury. So
that's if they're obeying the law, because they don't always do what they're supposed to do. But right now, there's so much scuttlebutt, and the fact that you got Donald Trump with all these special prosecutors with 400 and something helping, that's why things are getting done finally.
Well, then, why don't we coalesce? Hold on, just, pardon me. I didn't mean to speak over you. But I'm thinking that's why we need to coalesce. You know, everybody kind of put down their own agendas and then coalesce to, talk amongst ourselves to find out how we, you know, they got it accomplished.
Well, right now, they're suffering the death of a thousand cuts because there are many organizations putting in many lawsuits. And if they're going to take up 9/11, that's enough to take the whole cabal down, because if you really look into it and you're honest and
you
see who was involved, I mean, that's going to do it. Look, the average person's not going to believe it, because they're all in on it, and it was all, you know, it's going to take down everybody that was in this government. They're all, you don't have enough gallows to handle the treason that took place during 9/11.
Precisely, but I understand Gitmo is prepared for them.
They had their fingers in everything.
Precisely.
They even made money on it. It was the biggest short sale day in the stock market, because the guys that knew it was going to happen shorted the airline stocks that they knew were going to crash the planes.
Precisely.
That's how bad it was.
And 3 days, hold on just a minute. 3 days before, there was the owners of the building, of the buildings, took out a $3.5 billion insurance policy on terrorism.
Right.
So,
it said for specifically, that was Silverstein. Look at these. The news is all out there. These guys, it's all over but the crime. And I hold on to your hat, because it's going to be very exciting when this all comes to fruition.
Precisely. And it's in the process right now. And along with that, what we need to do is coalesce and just get rid of the Federal Reserve. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the very act itself, Federal Reserve Act of 1913, the 31st and last condition says that Congress at any time can repeal this act.
It's been repealed before. Andrew Jackson fought against the central bank.
No, it was never done, though, but it was never abolished, appealed. And so that's all that needs to be done. It just needs to be. And then what kicks in is it's a corporation. So what happens is, and I'll send you the little white paper I've got on that. Mm-hmm. What happens is when a corporation is abolished, and I've been in international business broker regarding corporations. When a corporation is abolished, what's happened? The assets revert to the shareholders, in this case, which is the U.S. Treasury. So Rothschild's $503 billion that he has would be going back to, we'd be out of debt overnight. But anywho, we all know this. The good news is the grand jury has been called. It's going to have all this information that these people have. I mean, it's so beautiful. Duh. It's like you said, it's in your face. So that's the way NLA can do the same thing. It's through it's the same guidelines as these people did. Anywho, okay, that's
very good. Look at the Federal Reserve is not going to go down without a fight. Believe me. And right now, the Fed is burning money. They're getting it back from the Treasury, and they're literally burning it. They're taking it out of circulation because they're pushing for inflation. And we're going to have deflation with inflation because they want to – this is their plan, to take the system down. And
exactly.
Of course
Agenda 21 that's been in effect for 100 years or whatever.
Right.
But
and listen, that Federal Reserve Act was never legal to begin with. It was unconstitutional. It was supposed to be Congress putting the amount on money, not some corporate entity that doesn't answer to anybody.
Precisely. But
and guess what? I think it's all over but the crying, and it's amazing. Look, they want
and
a
I
war. But be careful because, I'm telling you right now, it's going to get worse before it gets better. You're going to see the bottom drop out of the economy. You're going to see them try to do away with cash. There's going to be all kinds of crazy things that go on in the next
Israel controls Bitcoin, speaking of that or whatever. You know, and Israel has, through Intel, they've had the back door in the back door of everybody. China, whatever. So
the only reason they let Bitcoin go through is because that's the system they want. That was an experiment.
Correct.
They want a completely digital cryptocurrency. That's
cashless.
Absolutely.
What was that, Malaysia, that just went cashless? But anyway, neither here nor there, dear. I am very encouraged by this 9/11 grand jury. As you say, everything's going to be revealed and resolved. And, I'm a biggie believer in good. God wins.
Well,
so.
that one issue right there could take out most of the bad players that we have. Because they were all in on it. It was disgusting. It really was. And it was in your face, and they think we're stupid. And you know, it's like the truth is out, so let it prevail. You know what I mean?
All right. I'm out, my darling. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Good talking to you.
All righty. Good.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens because, you know, they're not done with their tricks. I mean, look at even this whole George Bush funeral thing. It happens on the day that they're supposed to be testifying, you know, in front of Congress, Huber and them. They always make a smoke and mirrors when something's going on. I mean, look at the day that Obama released his supposed birth certificate was the day that the Federal Reserve was called on the carpet to be audited by the Fed, and of course that's the day Obama released his birth certificate. And when they questioned the Fed and they asked, and when they said, he was outlying, and he said, "We don't take direction from anybody. The government can say we can do this, this, and that, but ultimately we are only beholden to ourselves." That's when the American public should have screamed and said, "Kick them out." Because basically he dissed the American people, thumbed his nose at them, and it went unnoticed because everybody was worried about this stupid phony birth certificate that Obama released that day. Because whenever they're doing something with the left hand, you better look and see what they're doing with the right hand, because they're running a distraction on us. And they're very good at that smoke and mirrors. So just everybody stay aware. And anything that's on the mainstream media, you basically can go the opposite way and be pretty accurate with that assessment. It's usually the opposite of what they're talking about. Well, that being said, I'm going to go ahead and open up Daniel from Utah. I don't think it worked. Daniel from Utah, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I have a question and some comments too, but my understanding is that the first Constitution up to the first 10 amendments was the Republic, and after that they changed it to the Constitution of the United States, which represent the corporate Constitution, because in the 11th Amendment, they basically violated Article 3, Section 2, a portion of it, basically turning common law jurisdiction of the judicial powers over to the corporation, who's basically putting itself above the common law as the gods and owners of the people. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. And they've done numerous things throughout, you know, as they went along to try to lock this thing down and basically usurp the Constitution. You know, and it started from the beginning, the Judiciary Act and many of the other things that they did. Although they also were shot down a number of times in their, you know, they tried to get rid of the juries and the grand juries, and that was back in the 40s. And with that effort, and it was over here in the Northeast in New York, they actually ended up strengthening them because there were some people that were awake, and they went back in and they saw what was going on. And so they bought us more time by making those institutions even stronger, which they had intended, you know, when they started their baloney, they had intended in gutting them, you know what I mean? So.
Right. Another question, comment is, I heard that the American Revolution, which I think was never won and is still not over, that it was funded by even King George was one of the financiers of the American Revolution, playing both sides of the war. And my perspective is that until the people actually go to a rights-based currency, where the creation of the currency is based on knowledge and allegiance to natural physical rights, that we cannot win this war, because the most powerful law is the law of currency. It is a form of worship and allegiance, full faith and credit of either good or bad people, either a currency based on rights or worshiping a false god, which is treason against rights and rule of law. And so my perspective is to ultimately win this war. The more we can educate people, the better. But ultimately to win, we the people have to go to a rights-based currency so that we're not borrowing from idolaters and deceivers in order to finance our own rule of law in creation of wealth.
Well, look, when this country was established, we had legal lawful money, which was gold and silver, and that was set up by God in the Bible, and they've been hacking away at that, turning it to a fiat currency, which traditionally in the Bible was always considered evil. You know, because it was usury and it created slavery, and that's exactly what they've done. They've made a slave out of us.
Well, the Bible allowed the use of like say commodities as a means of barter, but that was usually under kings, under rule of kings instead of rule of God. And there's scriptures in the Bible that talk about even putting our trust in material objects like gold and silver is a fallen state, in a lesser state where we're under the rule of kings rather than the rule of God's kingdom. And that's why I think Christ referred to the love of money as being the root of all evil, is because it is a false standard of judgment, and it's ultimately not God's higher law in order to create rule of law.
We in the beginning, they were under God's law. They spoke directly with him, and then they said, give us a king. And he warned them. He said, if I give you a king, he's going to do this, this, and that. And they did it anyway. And that's because we have free will. And so God lets us
right.
do things, even if it's detrimental to us. But as far as what's established, what I meant to say is gold and silver were recognized even by God as money. And look at anything that's a commodity, like wheat and grain and rice, they've been using them as forms of money for years. That is a commodity. It's a real thing. You know,
yeah.
money,
it, it's essentially,
money it's nothing.
It's essentially, it's essentially bartering. You're using
right.
gold and silver to barter for other goods. And that's
right.
fine to do that. But ultimately, in order to to seek and serve first the kingdom of God or rule of law in natural rights, we're going to actually have to go to a accounting system, God's accounting system, which is based on how much we uphold and serve rights. And once we base our accounting system on that, we are taking upon the seal of God in our forehead instead of the mark of the beast. You know, now you can have the currency, the mark of the beast, in your hand, and but if you put your trust in that, it means you're worshiping it and you have it in your forehead. And so we can have the mark in our right hand without having it in our forehead. But ultimately, to win this war, I think we need the seal of God in our forehead, which means we're using God's accounting system, which is not gold and silver. It's okay to barter with gold and silver, but ultimately we have to put something above that, which is rights and rule of law, in a currency based on that.
Well, wouldn't that be our grand jury system that puts the rule of law in?
Yeah,
men
right,
using
yes.
Over the rule of God and to govern themselves? I mean, that's
correct,
what we're
yes.
trying to do here.
Correct,
and
yes.
And that's what they don't want us to do.
Right, correct. And so people need to become the grand juries. If we don't govern ourselves, someone else will. And so we have to become the grand juries. But also we have to base our accounting system on those common natural rights that the grand jury represents.
Well, look, at we got a lot of work to do. Because
yes, we do. Yes, we do. Got to wake a lot of people up and say, hey,
and
if you want rights, you have
people.
To...
There's a lot of people that were born after. I mean, I look at even my children and the people in my neighborhood, and you know, they've never lived in a system that they've been enemy combatants all their life, according to the government. If they were born after, you know, 2000 or whatever, you know, I mean, even up to then, we believed we were free, and that was one of the things that kept us free, is they told us we were free, and we believed them. And that was actually a detriment for them. That was a deterrent. So
right.
Once they came to
yeah.
the NDAA and all this other baloney, you know, those children, my children, other than what I've taught them, which is considered subversive by the school system, as far as they know, they live in a police state. And it's normal. It's normal to be abused, you know.
Right.
So.
Wasn't it like the Trading with the Enemy Act? Wasn't that around 1933 or something that they declared U.S. citizens the enemy or something?
Well,
I'll
be telling you what. We've been under a state of emergency since the Second World War, and that was due to the bankruptcy. And every president has signed that state of emergency, because when they get in, they say, oh, you got to sign this, because if you don't sign, you see, that's the way they got this fiat money on us, because they knew it was unconstitutional. So they had to put us under a state of martial law, so to speak, a state of emergency. That's how they suspended
right.
the Constitution. And every president signed it. Now, when Donald Trump got in, he said, oh, yes, you're right. We're in a state of emergency. We have enemies, foreign and domestic, and it's these corporations and anybody that helps them. He turned it around on them, and he declared the enemy why we were in a state of emergency. And
created by the real enemy.
And that's right. And he's even using their bastardized laws, the Patriot Act, against them, basically.
Oh,
because the fact that you can send them to Gitmo, that's, you know, a trial off of soil, like Brent says, for somebody who's not in the military. It's not really constitutional, but those are the laws they signed on the books. So if Obama and Hillary get sent to Gitmo, they're getting sent to the hell that they created, okay?
They're reaping what they sow, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, isn't
that's
that the
good.
Way God operates, though? He usually
yeah,
he
yeah,
usually
people reap what they sow, yeah, and that's how you start fixing the problem, is by giving people their own medicine, yeah.
That's right. He leads the devil around like a bull by the nose, and they don't even know it. You know, they think they're moving in one direction, and they're really moving in another direction. So, look, if
right.
nothing else, it's been very exciting times, I'll tell you that.
Well, there's a lot of potential. There's a lot of potential for good or bad. And if the people ain't united in governing themselves and understanding how that works, then it's you know, it could turn into a nationwide or worldwide civil war, but it's not going to turn out good for most people if they don't wake up and understand rule of law and joined the grand jury.
The way I perceive it is that, you know, where the big universities are in the big cities, it's like Sodom and Gomorrah. They're going to end up being destroyed because that's where the seat of all this baloney, this Marxism, socialism is. And you got all the people on the dole, and when those are the ones that are going to be riding when they take it away. Where your heartland America, you know, they've kind of been Bible based, and they understand
more self-sufficient.
You know, that's right, and so they're going to straighten themselves out before the cities ever will. You know,
I mean, they're less communist and more responsible and
right,
practical.
Right. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know that, you know, if you want to do something, I think you're going to have to seek out a community, okay, because it's going to establish. The government's going to revert back to the countywide, to, you know, the shire, the sheriff. That's where it started, and that's where it's going to have to go back to in order to straighten out, I think, in my opinion. You know, if we get a terrible depression and the money goes down and that, hopefully we never get down below the county government, because that's where we have our control up to.
The sooner the local communities start creating their own credit unions based on rule of law and rights, the less damage they're going to receive before they start recovering.
Exactly.
You know, so as long as they're asking for...
Putting this off for so long, they've been putting it off for so long, kicking the can down the road, that when it comes to a head, it's going to be... They're just making it harder than it had to be, you know?
The longer people stay asleep, the harder it's going to be to overcome self-destruction when they start waking up.
Exactly. And you know, it's not going to be easy, because the way they've got people today, and look at all the pension funds are broke. You know, when that goes down, and all of a sudden, you know, you can't collect your pension, and Social Security is no longer solvent, and I don't know, you know,
the whole economy is being robbed every day through the fraud and treason, because people, it's not about public service, it's about public robbery, and that's what the government's doing. Instead of serving the people, they're robbing them. It's bankrupting
Absolutely.
The whole society.
Yep, and they do it at every level, right down to the town.
Right,
the town,
every level, that's
true. The town
true.
Courts are just as corrupt as any of them, and they, you know, when the top is rotten, the bottom gets it all rolls downhill, this baloney, and they
yeah,
get
cause
it.
Yeah, because it's all based on the economic system, and it's bribery and robbery from the top down, and the more bankrupt it becomes, then the harder it's going to fall.
I used to work for a school system, and there was so much corruption there, it wasn't funny. I mean, and it was all based in the supervisor's office. You know, what do you call the guy? The superintendent's office, excuse me. But it wasn't the superintendent. They had a business manager that was there for 30 years, and the school board would hire this business manager to go out and hunt up a superintendent who would serve for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then they would get rid of him to get somebody else. But this guy had such a corrupt thing going on, and there was a pecking order of stealing going on. So the top guy got the most, down to the littlest guy who got his portion, and that's the way they ran this thing. I mean, it was so bad that, you know,
right.
they would push things on you to take home just to have something on you. You know, I don't care if it was cleaning products or nuts and bolts or whatever they stuff you. Here, take this. Because they were all doing it, and they weren't happy unless they could get used to it.
And that's how every corporation works under the banking system, counterfeit banking. And most people don't realize that started with the gold standard, which was a false standard. And it's okay to barter with that, but as soon as you start making notes of credit on it, then it just turns into a counterfeiting scheme. But even bartering with gold is also abusive and inefficient. And so ultimately it needs to be based on rights.
Yeah. Well, look at, they even had, I don't remember what culture it was, but they had sticks that they would carve that when they kept track of their stock markets. The stock market is not a new idea. It's been around for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Right. Yeah, I saw that on the Money Masters video.
Right.
Heard it
and
there,
so they...
That's a very good video.
They can take, you know, rice and beans and write paper on it if they want to, you know what I mean? Or knot sticks and do the same thing. So there's no amount of mischief that men can get into, you know.
But once you base currency on the law and it's applied equally to every member, then no one is manipulating or control it to inflate it or deflate it or steal from the people. And that's the only stable currency that there can be, is one that's actually based on the law and applied equally to the people that uphold that law. And that's why that is God's currency, is because it never changes and it's very stable. That's the accounting system that makes every participant wealthy eternally, because it's based on God's eternal law, which is natural common law rights. That's the true accounting system, because really, a currency is a measurement of the value of upholding rights or violating rights. And so any other accounting system is actually a deception, because rights is the true measurement of value of exchange. And if anything that violates that, then it's not an honest and fair exchange. It's a deception used to enslave, rob, and commit identity theft, and, of course, murder as well. So rights is the only honest accounting system. And once the people understand that, and start creating credit unions based on knowledge and allegiance to those natural rights, then you have a very powerful, stable system that will take over the world once people wake up and see what's good for them. That's the key to the kingdom that's missing in our Constitution, is an honest currency based on natural rights, God's kingdom.
Right. Well, we can only hope we get there. Anyway,
yes,
thank you, Daniel.
One step at a time.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you guys very much.
Okay, good talking to you. I don't know if Brent is here yet. I have one other person in the queue, but if he's here, let me know, Jan, okay?
Okay.
I don't see him, but I may not be. So I'm going to open up, it looks like, H. Miller, I don't know from where.
Yeah.
Go ahead, you've been on mute.
I'm Benjamin Miller, I'm from New Jersey.
Welcome.
So I wanted to tell you about they were trying to put a guardian on my mother. She's 91 years old, it started last year in August, and papers were served. But I took on six lawyers the past months, and I had the case dismissed. I was a pro se litigant, basically, because my lawyer quit on me. What happened was my mother had a psychologist, said she was good. She didn't need a guardian. They had fraudulent psychologists. Then they're trying to say she was vulnerable and vulnerable to me and under undue influence to me, which was not true. I only moved back in 2 years ago, so it was a long, long story. But back in October 29th, this past 2 months, about a month ago or so, the judge wanted, I get an email at 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon, be in court tomorrow at 2 o'clock, we want to throw you out of the house.
Is that what it said?
Well, and they said we want to remove you from the house.
Right.
Yes, that's what it said. So it said, so I went to court and I said to the judge that you have no judicial authority, because I spoke with John about things and other people. You have no judicial authority. You have been fraudulent. You have not been following the rules of the court, et cetera, et cetera. So 2 days later, she resigned. So then I filed appeal papers in the state capitol, and an hour and a half after I filed appeal papers, they had this new judge on the case with a conference call with all the lawyers. So I filed papers for an order for the judge to do, and he actually filled it out that afternoon. And then the case was dismissed.
What order did you give him? An order for what?
The order was to dismiss the case and a few other things.
Okay, so you sent it to the judge and he signed it.
Yeah, I filed in the court.
That's like unheard of. But anyway, go ahead. I don't know what magic you had there, but obviously they must be under scrutiny or whatever if they're going to pay attention to the rule of law. You know, when they have these meetings with all the attorneys, if you're pro se litigant, guess what? You're supposed to be there. What are they doing talking? You know, what are they doing talking ex parte? If you're defending yourself, then you need to be privy to those conversations now, don't you?
That was before my lawyer quit.
If you got a lawyer, they won't have you there.
He didn't like me filing all these papers, so he quit.
Well, that's good. That's a good way to get rid of a lawyer when you have one, right?
He quit a week ago from last Friday. And then the judge dismissed it without prejudice of 45 days with prejudice. And the guardian we chose the guardian with all kinds of stuff. He never showed up in court. He's afraid. And my mother's lawyer, who was also, he had a deposition on one of the psychologists. Psychologist came to the house and lied, talked to me for 2 minutes, then they tried to put a guardian on me. And the psychologist at a deposition, because they were going to have a trial, but it was supposed to start today, but the judge said forget about it. So my mother's lawyer, excuse me, interviewed the psychologist, and the psychologist came to the house for like 2 hours to evaluate her, charged her anywhere from the tune of about $8,500 to $11,500. And by the way, she's nowhere to be found. She's sick for the next 2 months.
Good.
So then it was dismissed without prejudice, but they gave my mother's lawyer all the money to hold for like ever, for eternity. So then, and we're talking about a lot of money, so I went to the court today to file papers to get, you know, saying it was fraudulent. And then I leave the court, and guess my papers were stamped December 11. Well, today is December 10. And then I left the courthouse at about 3 o'clock, and I came home and I saw an email that was delivered around 4:22 p.m., how my mother's court-appointed lawyer, she had two, a court-appointed lawyer and her chosen lawyer, a court-appointed lawyer at 4:22 p.m. sent an email demanding he wants about $42,000 when he didn't even do anything. And that's why it was dated December 11th, so he could get that in before, they could say he got that in before it was stamped, before I filed it.
You didn't know you were in a time machine when you go in the court, did you? But anyway, go ahead.
So that's where we stand, but we're still fighting this, and it's on Peel and Trenton, and it's quite complex, and I want to thank National Liberty Alliance because got a lot of information from you.
Well, it's glad to hear that you've had somewhat of a success there, but don't forget, it's all about the money. That's what they want. That's the only reason you're in there in the first place, because they're all hungry and greedy and looking for that money, you know. And they will stop at nothing to get it. And I got to believe that there's some shakeup in the court system as far as some of the investigation that's going in. Because some of these people crumbling the way they did, I mean, I've heard lots of other horror stories that these guys, they don't crumble, they don't sign things, they don't give an inch. So it's encouraging that you were able to get some of your stuff through, and the judge actually paid attention. So that gives me hope that there's stuff going on in the courts, that they're starting to wake up and maybe starting to fear a little bit repercussions of them, you know, some of the unlawful, illegal, and treasonous stuff that they've been playing around with. So that's a good thing, especially New Jersey. Everybody knows New Jersey is one of the, my goodness, one of the worst places as far as, you know, it's not between New York and New Jersey and California. I don't know who's worse. They're all vying for first place.
Well, see, they've been, this is about guardianship cases. There's a lot of abusive guardianship cases. What they do is they clear, I'm sure you know, they clear people incompetent all over the place, take their money, and then that's the end of it. Then they put them in a nursing home, and then they take their money, and they'll watch them drop dead. That's why they do it.
So yep, that's the prescription. That's the prescription. The other horrible thing is probate court. You get into probate. Forget about it. You never get out. They steal everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's epidemic. It's all over the place. I mean, you hear Crystal and the people in Connecticut there, and they're all getting together, and they're all mad, and they're practically storming the courts now. And that's what we need to do. We need to make our voices heard, you know? And pay attention to what's going on. You know, some of these other organizations, like that person we had on, that woman from Texas, said, you know, we have to rest in each other's victories and you know, acknowledge that and follow suit with some of that stuff, whatever works, you know. And that's what that's going to do, is that will also set a precedent in the courts. If we start getting noisy and winning stuff, it's going to make it easier for us in other courts, and other judges and attorneys and stuff will start towing the line better. You know, the more victories we have, the more the easier we'll get to have more victories. You know, one's going to beget the other. You know.
Well, I know, but it's interesting that they put this temporary guardian on the case, and in the bank account he put guardian incapacitated adult. It says it on the bank account that he made, where he took the money and took it his own account, guardianship account, incapacitated adult. My mother was never declared incapacitated, and he's going to get in trouble for that one too. He had no right.
Yeah,
to
well,
there, in the first place.
That, and you know what, they're so used to getting away with this stuff, and they think they're untouchable. And they just go ahead and do this stuff because they're used to the status quo, and that's where you're going to see, like you said, yeah, he's going to get in trouble because finally, you know, there are some repercussions for this stuff. You know.
By the way, don't people shouldn't think that these people are invincible or that they're so competent. A lot of these people are incompetent, but they put on this false veneer like they, you know, fooling everybody, think they know what they're doing. But if you look at them, you can find what they're doing is wrong if you just think about it, and don't let them think they're like they know better than you. That's what their game. And you have to have...
That's right. I agree. Yeah.
So.
Well, I've seen some of the papers the attorneys turn in, and it looks like something out of kindergarten. I mean, sometimes it's embarrassing. I feel embarrassed for them that they consider themselves, you know, experts and attorneys and stuff, you know.
Well, I know. Well, it's just something that was not finished yet, because if it's without prejudice, these attorneys can reverse their take
you
away their
outside, Lucy.
And then do something, but you know, I'm keeping an eye on it. Never underestimate or let them go. So I'm just going to get that out there to people, what's going on.
Well, that's good, and it's good to hear from you, and it's good to see that you're making some headway. However, you know,
yep,
small or whatever it could be. I hope you, you know, keep us informed. You know,
well, I sent Jan the court order dismissing the case, and also the November 2nd order from the other judge. I sent him a few things. I'm gonna send that some stuff to him to see what was going on, because on November 2nd, the judge basically reversed, after she said she resigned on October 31st, she wrote a court order on November 2nd saying that she basically reversed everything from the beginning. Basically, the whole thing was a fraud from the beginning, and she reversed everything after I dismissed her.
She dismissed, in other words, she reversed the whole case, which means there's
no
case anymore.
She basically, what she said, she declared my mother incompetent, she declared me power of attorney, and the whole case, she would never do that. She never declared that. But all of a sudden, she changed her tune.
Yeah, somebody got to her. She's worried, and that's a good thing. That's good. So you got to wonder, you know, I mean, I think you're starting to see some of the reverberations of you know, what's going on with Trump and the rule of law, you know, that they're going to start paying attention now, hopefully.
Well, I from your mouth to God's ears, but I think this is a unique case. I wish it were more prevalent, but I don't see it right at this moment anyway. It's just the way I see it.
Well, I hear of different things in different places, and there are some things going on in certain different courts around that to me are surprising. It's not the status quo. So the more I hear things like that, the more encouraged I get. And you're right. As far as the grand scheme of things, it is a drop in the bucket. There's no doubt about it. There's certainly a whole lot more corruption going on than the right thing, granted. But, you know, in the dark, it doesn't take a lot of light to overcome the dark, if you know what I mean. So every time we get a victory, I think it means more than all their victories, you know, than the darkness that they spew. So we'll see. I mean, you know, the way you handle yourself and the stuff that went on, that's also unusual out there. I mean, don't sell yourself short either. You had a certain knowledge and you conducted yourself in a certain way. And whatever you did, maybe it was enough to intimidate those other ones up there that are supposed to be so smart, you know?
Well, what happened was when it all started, when I started filing papers, they said to me, come to the back room in the courthouse. In the clerk's office, I said, no, I think they were going to arrest me for scaring the court when I was away from the public. But I figured, no. So if anybody files papers and they say, come to the back room, don't do it.
Don't go in the back room.
Yeah.
Like the chokey. Well, you know, we've filed papers before, and the answer says, and they file legal-looking documents. What's a legal-looking document? Look, if you file something in the court, it's either legal or it's illegal. What's a documents appearing to look like legal documents? You know, because you know, we always do the paperwork pretty accurately, and John's a stickler to having everything in its place. And compared to what some of the attorneys write down there, I mean, it looks like we know more than they do by, if you look up the papers that we file, you know.
Well, people, I think everyone should know that the attorneys work, their first obligation is to the court, right? Not to you.
Absolutely. They take it. That's right. You're like third or fourth on their list by the time they get down to you.
Well, I think say good night, and I guess I'll keep people posted, Jan.
Yeah, keep us informed, because it is interesting, and we are interested. Okay?
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
So that
Brent is here.
Okay. And Brent, you can kick in there anytime you want. I'm done with everybody in the queue on this end, so without further ado, if you're ready, I'll hand it over to you. I mean, we did have some questions that I don't know if we want to give them to you right now. There was a couple of questions that I thought you would be better able to answer than myself. I don't know if you want to go over them or you just want to go into your thing.
No, Gerard, go ahead, throw them out there. And if I can answer them, I will. If I don't know anything about it, I'll say so.
Well, the one particular one that I didn't really have much idea on was somebody went to get deposed. Or Jan, you wanna read that one? Because I didn't have a lot of answer for that one because I just didn't know that much about it.
This person went in for a deposition, I think it was last Wednesday, and was advised to preserve the integrity of her answers and protect herself against any unnecessary invasion of privacy. So she did the best she could without having an attorney, which she didn't want. She only objected to those questions that had no relevance at all to the nature of her claim. Now, this deposition started at 10 in the morning and was still going on at after 7 at night. It was 9 hours. And that shortly after 7, the opposing attorney made a statement to the plaintiff that she was going to suspend the deposition because she refused to answer her questions. And she said that she was going to file a motion because she wasn't telling her my personal business. It seems like the better I performed, the more pissed off the attorney became. I believe that she is using a tactic so that she can take this deposition all over again. What steps can I take to avoid this from happening? Did you hear me, Brent? Brent, where are you? I see you, Brent, but well, can anybody hear me?
So I hear you.
Oh, okay. Can you hear anybody else then, Terry?
Oh, I cannot. If Brent's talking, he's muted.
I don't see him anymore on the panel. That's what's bothering me. There he is.
Yeah, he was in there, and then he disappeared. He must have had to dial back in.
Yeah, he just called back in. He's back now. Did you hear any of that, Brent, or should I go over it again?
You might have to do it again.
Oh, he's gone again. I wonder if he's driving. Going in and out of cover. There you are.
No, that's me coming in there. Is that Brent?
Well,
or
no, Brent at 11 seconds. Yep.
Oh,
yep.
There you go. Okay.
This is me again. And I would ask, I don't know what you've said since I've been gone. I keep dropping in and out. But what was the question? Can you summarize it for me? Just tell me what the short of it is.
Okay. Toward the end, opposing attorney made the statement to the plaintiff that she was going to suspend the deposition because I refused to answer her questions. And she said that she was going to file a motion because I wasn't telling her my personal business. It seems like the better I performed, the more pissed off the attorney became. I believe she's using it as a tactic so that she can take this deposition all over again. What can I do to avoid that from happening?
Well, my first question would be, do you have a lawyer?
No.
If you don't, then okay, then when you go into deposition and you go under oath, if you don't want to answer a question and you really think that the other side doesn't have right to the information, for whatever reason, it's not relevant, or maybe you want to take the fifth on that particular question. Use this opportunity to say also, don't ever, anybody, ever, just say, I'm not going to answer any questions. It's called a blanket fifth. Now, I'm not answering any questions. Once you do that, you've left the realm of asserting your rights. Our Fifth Amendment, the way it works in our country, for whatever reason, is you have to refuse to answer questions one at a time. And if you assert a blanket fifth and say, I'm not answering any more questions, you could be put in jail for contempt. Depends upon the judge. Just so be careful. Just say, no, I will listen to every question and decide whether or not I'm going to answer. Now, if the other lawyer said, well, I'm going to file a motion and in front of the judge make you answer this question. Well, if you really believe that it's none of their business for whatever reason, relevancy or otherwise, you go to the hearing and make your arguments why you don't want to answer the question. Then if you want to, if the judge said, well, no, I want you to answer the question, then just say, will do, Your Honor, or I, Your Honor, with all. But that's your remedy. If they want to go to the mat and go to hearing over the matter, you have a conviction, that's the time to assert the reasons why you won't answer the question. Again, I can only think of two reasons. Number one would be relevance, and number two would be the Fifth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment is possible where you believe that your question could provide a link in a chain that could lead to an indictment. In other words, you would be putting yourself in what the courts call real prosecutorial danger. That doesn't make any difference whether you're guilty or not guilty. Real prosecutorial danger is a reality, even if you're innocent. And so you're entitled to take the fifth on a question if that happens. But right now, what this other lawyer is doing is testing your mettle, and if making threats, lawyers do that kind of stuff. And if you believe you're right, don't hesitate. Don't be intimidated. Just be willing to go in front of the judge and explain why you don't want to answer it. Now, if the judge wants to know more, you can request, when you go into that hearing, you can request what folk call an in-camera hearing. In-camera, that's a fast, fancy word that means in the box. That's what a camera is. It's a box. That's why we call it a camera. That's an old Latin word. It used to be a box. I used to have a brownie. That was a camera box. Well, in-camera in court means in the chambers of the judge, out of the hearing of the other lawyer. And when you're in there, then you can explain to the judge. He may say, well, what is the answer to the question? And you can tell him. And if you tell him, and then you say, I believe this puts me in prosecutorial danger. And he'll either say, yes, I agree with you, or no, I don't. And if he disagrees with you and you still refuse to answer the question, then he has the opposite, option of holding you in contempt. So it's kind of a, well, I should say, what I've just laid out to you, the processes, would be hard to remember. And maybe the first time you've heard it would seem a little complex. It isn't, but the first time you hear it, it appears that way. I understand that. But it all comes down to whether you think that the other side has a right to the information. And if you really don't hesitate to go tell the judge. Just remember, when you go to hearing and the judge says, well, you've got to answer it, and if you still have the option of refusing to answer it, but you may be held in contempt. I hope that helps. Go ahead, Gerard.
Yeah. Okay, that was that one. I don't know if there was another one from Brent, was there? I don't remember, Jan.
Well, what about the sheriff that got off by having the verbal count from the jurors? Did we answer that well enough or not? You want to get Brent's comments on that?
Yeah, go ahead. Read him that one. That one's a little squirrely, too.
We had a sheriff here in Pennsylvania in Greensburg, just east of Pittsburgh, and he was brought up on charges for forcing his deputies to help him campaign and having him do things they didn't want to do, and they were doing it on office time. So when he went to trial, and they dropped, I guess, all but two counts. There's at least one more. And the jury all signed a sheet for guilty, so they brought him in. And when the verdict was read, the defense attorney decided that couldn't possibly be right, that he was guilty. So he asked the judge, I guess, to take an individual count of the jurors. So the judge did. Well, when he came to juror number six, the juror number six changed his mind and went not guilty. So the judge sent him back out to deliberate, and after half an hour they came back and said they couldn't reach a decision, so they called a mistrial. Is that standard operating procedure? The defense attorney can ask for an individual count like that?
Correct. You have the right as a defendant or your lawyer to take a poll of the jury, they call it a poll. Poll is mm-hmm. no word that means head. So you have them say individually. Instead of just the jury foreman speaking for everybody, you have the right to ask to poll each one individually. And if it comes up, somebody says not guilty and all the rest say guilty, that's right. So it should be. I think that right should be used more often. And if the jury's hung on this guy, well, God bless him and so be it. That's what juries are for, whether we think they're right or wrong. Remember, they're the final court of last resort, as every fact, even in the federal courts, our Constitution says that no fact decided by a jury may be reconsidered in any place except according to the course or the rules of the common law. This is big stuff. This is God's way of making decisions, whether they're right or wrong. We go through the process, and God says he'll ratify the result if we follow the process. That's a fascinating story. I'd be curious what the name of the county was. Maybe I could find more on the Internet to read about it.
It's in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. It's just east of Pittsburgh. I don't know the county.
Okay. Well, no, that'd tell the story. Well, thanks. Yeah, that's what I know about it. For what it's worth, yes, it's part of our common law tradition to have the right to ask for a polling of the jury.
Okay.
So am I to take it right that once the jury's hung, that's the end of the story? They can't retry it?
No, and that disturbed me a lot. But no, that's not the way it works. If the jury's hung, then the government has the option. They don't always take it, but most often seems they do, to come back at you again. I would think that being put in jeopardy of life or limb or liberty once would be enough. And I'm sorry.
Right.
Is that the way you feel, Gerard? Is that what you're
saying?
That's
the way I thought it used to be before they started all the baloney.
Yeah. Well, I'm not old enough to know how far back that went, but I've heard that too. And I don't like it. As a matter of fact, this morning, I was shaving, Gerard, and my mind got to stewing on that. And I said, I wonder if I ought to run for Congress and introduce a bill to stop that kind of shenanigans in the federal courts. But then I said, no. No, that'd be too hard, too long a process. I'm not old enough. I got other things I want to do, but I agree with you.
Yeah, it doesn't seem right. If they're the court of last resort and their decisions is final, seems to me that says it all right there, no?
Yeah, you're put in jeopardy once, that's enough. I mean, but murder cases, doesn't make any difference what it is, they come back at you again. Now, I don't know in Pennsylvania, I shouldn't say. I don't know Pennsylvania's law that well, but I just know as a general rule, federal courts and all the state courts I know about, that's the way it's done. Like I said, they can come back at you. As they say, Gerard, they get a second bite of the apple. That's not right.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, well, those were the two we were kind of hung on. Our jury was hung on, and you straightened us out. So go ahead and do your spiel. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Gerard, I'm going to... If I can find my glasses, I've done lost them. Hang on just a minute so I can see what I'm going to talk about here. I found a pair of glasses. Here's my spares. The Constitution of the United States. Let's go to what is a famous part of the Constitution, the enumerated powers of Congress. The enumerated powers of Congress, and this section, it's Section 8 of Article 1 is the enumerated powers of Congress. The list of the powers that Congress has, and Congress, at least it's supposed to be this way, Congress has no powers outside of this list. Now remember the courts and the government, the general government, as our forefathers used to call it. They didn't call it the federal government. They called it the general government. The general government in Washington, D.C. is a government of limited powers, as are the federal courts, and the courts and government of the states within their raw territorial jurisdiction, our governments have relatively unlimited power. They have a lot of power. The Constitution originally, and still is in general, mostly is supposed to limit the general government in Washington, D.C., and the states are to remain in their sovereignty. So there are powers the federal government has. Article 1, Section 8, said James Madison, when people came to him and said, we got to have a Bill of Rights in this Constitution, he said, what do you need a Bill of Rights for? He said, we got Article 1, Section 8, it limits Congress. Well, the folk that said we needed a Bill of Rights were right, because what James Madison thought would happen didn't happen. James Madison said, oh, this list of powers, that Congress won't go beyond it. But Congress has gone beyond this list of powers. As a matter of fact, as they teach law students these days, Congress is the king of the Commerce Clause, and through the Commerce Clause, Congress can do pretty near anything Congress decides it wants to do, because Congress is the king. Whatever Congress says is included in that Commerce Clause, interstate commerce. That's law. The courts have never disagreed with Congress in general. I don't know why that is. But Article 1, Section 8 limits the powers of Congress by enumerating, that is, listing them. And Congress has no lawful power outside those powers our Constitution lists. That's fact, as a matter of law. Only that act of government falling within one of our Constitution's clear grants of power is lawful. Any act outside these grants of power listed is not an act of constituted government, but rather an act of lawless men. Now, all the things the federal government is doing now, over 5,500 federal criminal statutes, and most of them are overlapping and doubled up, when we know that there are only four kinds of crimes that the Constitution lists that the federal courts have jurisdiction over. Only four. But yet we have over 5,500 statutory federal crimes that Congress has passed. This is the criminal jurisdictions overcome us. There's a book out there written about 6-8 years ago called Three Felonies a Day. And the point of the author is that most every American, on average, commits about three felonies a day. And the one I like to cite is, because this was the habit of people I knew, I say this in jest, but it's funny, but it's true. People I knew, every night before they went to bed, they'd go out on the end of their front porch and take a leak. And men would, not the women, of course. And that is now a federal crime, by the way, under an act that was passed or pushed through by Al Gore back when he was a senator. And the key phrase that prevents taking a leak off the end of your porch is the language goes like this. So you're not allowed, it's against the law, carries about 20 years, up to 20 years, to release any dilatory, keyword, substance into the environment. It's a felony to release any dilatory substance into the environment. Well, that's what taking a leak off the front porch is. And I've known men that have gone to prison, federal prison, good men, hardworking men that own private businesses that have gone to federal prison for, one of them I know particularly, nearby home, went to federal prison for 6 months because a disgruntled employee he fired from his grain wagon fabricating business. He went to the feds when he got fired because he wouldn't work or something. Got mad, went to the feds, told them that his employer had buried a pink can out in the fence row behind the business, an empty pink can. Well, he settled out of court. But that's the kind of thing they're doing now. They're going way beyond those four kinds of crimes. That is included in the powers of the federal government to prosecute piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, violations of international law, counterfeiting the currency and current coin of the United States. No, counterfeiting the current coin and securities of the United States. And then finally, treason. Just four kinds. But anything that relates to interstate Congress and anything else that relates to the environment, Congress has said we have jurisdiction to legislate, and the courts have not stopped them. Thank our providence of God that we do have a Bill of Rights, that there were some wise enough to insist upon it. Well, within these powers listed here in Article Section 8 of Article 1, the powers that are listed, the courts have said that Congress has absolute power within that area, right up to the boundary of that power itself. Plenary within that power, complete jurisdiction within that power. Again, right up to the edge. And these listed powers here draw bright line boundaries to limit Congress, while also intending that Congress need not shy from those clear-cut boundaries. In other words, the power is plenary. Moreover, any act of Congress falling within one of the powers Section 8 lists, our courts say, occupy the field, trumping any conflicting state law, which must therefore yield the field. If there's two laws, one federal and one state, and they're both on the same subject, well, if they ever go head-to-head in court, they yield the field. The state must yield the field. That's the language the courts use. Met a fella the other day, a young fella, standing outside a restaurant. And I said, it was cold out there. And he was out there smoking a electronic cigarette or something. I said, well, who are you? You know, how are you? What's your name? I'm just interested in people. I said, what do you do? He said, I'm a farmer. I said, is that right? What do you farm? He said, hemp. He was a marijuana grower from California. I said, you grow marijuana? I said, is business good? He said, yeah, business is good. You making a good living? Oh, I make a good living. I said, is it easy to do? He said, it's easy to raise it. The hard thing is to know what the rules are. I said, what do you mean? Well, he said, you know, the state government says it's lawful for me to grow marijuana, and they give me a license all to do it. Regulations are supposed to govern us. But the federal government says it's against the federal law to grow marijuana. I said, so the federal government could shut you down anytime they wanted just by coming in and taking over your business and burning your field. He said, that's right. But I said, they don't do that, do they? He said, no, they've chosen not to do that. But if they wanted to, they could. Oh, yeah, if they wanted to, they could. There's not much I could do about it. And the way I understand the law, our constitutional structure, California would have to yield the field. I said, well, that's the way I understand it, too. As long as they don't do it, they don't have to. And the federal government has chosen for a while not to do that. But bottom line, where our Constitution is silent, Congress has no right to act. Now, even though this is not, as a practical matter, true in our own day, I want it to be. And the only way it's going to happen is if we talk about it more and people get to jabbering about it, and it becomes one of those questions that DJ Trump makes much of, as he has of some things that have heretofore been ignored, some questions of constitutional law he's raised. Well, maybe he'll raise this one. In fact, it's always been true of common law government, whether the Constitution in question is written, as our Constitution is here in the United States, or unwritten, as it is in England, still we have a Constitution. Of course, in England, their Constitution is the common law. Here, our Constitution is the common law, too. It's just put in writing. Our Constitution is a brief of common law government, for instance. And that's true of several of the states. The state constitutions are briefs of common law government. It is the first, except Louisiana, it is the first principle of both Scripture and the common law that government is never free to act without clear and lawful grant of authority. And by listing the powers it gives to government, our Constitution limits government to those powers only and no others, those and no more. Simply put, in the Scripture, as well as at common law, the law of agency relationships governs grants of authority, recognizing narrow authority having little discretion, and broad authority having great discretion. In no case, however, does agency law recognize a grant of authority without limits. Let me repeat that. In no case does our common law of agency grant authority without limits. This is true of all of the universe. You know, the Bible says, Romans chapter 13, that all authority is from God. He is the fountain, the spring, and the source of all right, authority, jurisdiction, warrant, and there is no other source. He is it. And as he delegates that authority out then everyone who gets authority gets just some of it. In other words, as a husband and a father, a man has a certain amount of authority. He doesn't have all authority. He doesn't have authority over his neighbor's wife or his neighbor's children, but he does have authority over his. So all grants of authority are limited. If they weren't, if somebody didn't have a limit to the grant of authority, then that person is a god. He is God himself. Well, that's not true. I'm bringing up one other point, and many people have pointed this out through the centuries. I want to point it out, too. Many common lawyers from Britain have pointed it out through the centuries. If there is no outside force whereby the powers of governments among men are limited, then the governments among men will inevitably be total. They will not acknowledge any limits of power. They will be, and that's the very definition of Antichrist itself, someone proclaiming to have all power on earth among men. That is Antichrist. That's the definition of it. That's what that preposition means, anti. It means in place of God himself. Well, there's only one person that's been granted that authority, that plenary authority, and that's the Messiah of God, Jesus Christ himself, no other. No other has been granted that. So because we have had that sense in our own country that there is an outside force limiting government among men, we have had a measure of freedom. And that freedom will not stay with us unless we continue to have a critical mass among us that has a sense that there is an outside force, an outside power, a personal power that limits government. And that, of course, is truly not a fiction, the creator of all things, the maker of heaven and earth and all that in them is. And by the way, no matter what the view of our founding personages of our country was, they all believed that much. They did believe that, and whatever other weird thing you might think they believed. And that's important to us today. It is inevitable if we don't maintain that there is an outside force limiting government power. By listing the powers of government here, Article 1, Section 8, we have to the degree that the powers of government are limited, that is proportional to the degree that we will enjoy our freedoms. When we talked about agency, let me go to the next part of this. Oh, this is going to be enough. I'll finish up with this. Any grant of unlimited power to government, of course, is lawless. Whether right or wrong, government's practices arise from a people's deepest religious convictions. Government's practices always, everywhere, without question, arise from a people's deepest religious convictions. It is impossible to separate government from one's response to his final arbiter of right and wrong, whoever he thinks that is, whether it be Allah or whether it be the true God, and there's a great difference between the two, of course. But your government is the result of religious convictions. Religious convictions are your convictions, your response, your religare, your response back, your binding back to whoever you deem as your ultimate decider of right and wrong. So also the tenet of common law government, that all authority men are given is limited, arises from general and special revelation. That is, as our Declaration of 76, laws of nature, that's general revelation, and laws of nature's God, that's special and specific revelation written, as Blackstone tells us, the Bible. Reformers recognize this principle, holding that where Scripture grants government the power to act, it has that authority. And where Scripture is silent, government has no right. The first principle followed into the early Americans' view of our Constitution. In all events, without the Word of God written, there will be no limit to government, no state the circumference of whose authority is defined by a force external to its own. I'm quoting. That's a quote from Lord Acton. Let me repeat that. He said that, by the way, Lord Acton was a very ardent, conservative Roman Catholic, in the same vein as Mel Gibson and his father. And if you ever read about their view of Romanism, that's who Lord Acton was. He said this, In all events, without the word of God, there will be no limited government. No state, the circumference of whose authority is defined by a force external to its own. Well, Gerard, back to you. Thanks again. Oh, let me say this, as I sometimes forget to do, Gerard. My comments are my own and may or may not reflect the point of view of the principals or the organization, National Liberty Alliance. But as always, it's a privilege that National Liberty Alliance allows me to come on and say a few words. Back to you, Gerard.
Thank you, Brent. Okay. Well, it's 11:18. We have nobody in the queue, so it's going to be an early night unless somebody jumps in there with some kind of a question. I just want to tell everybody to keep their eyes open because we got a lot of stuff going down on the economic front. And whatever Trump is doing with this cabal that's going on in the banking system, I do believe that, you know, we're going into some very hyperinflation, it looks like, according to what I see out there, which means, you know, things are going to start moving. Look, you know, if he's talking about taking this Federal Reserve System down, it's not going to go down without a fight. So keep your eyes open, and, you know, I would say, you know, make sure you have some supplies, because if things get bad, whatever's on your shelf, that's what you're going to function with for a while. So it's always a good suggestion to be a little bit somewhat self-sufficient. You know, if you can't get to the store or whatever, you want to make sure that you can stay inside and survive without, you know, especially in the wintertime. It's cold. You know, you need heat. You need fuel. I mean, I don't have any special timeline, but it certainly looks like things are going to start moving, you know, as far as the prosecution of some of these actors, and I don't believe that that's going to go off without a hitch, that they're not going to pull some kind of false flag, and the Federal Reserve is at the end of its rope. They've stretched this money system beyond where it can go, beyond where it can. Where they can keep throwing money, printing money, and stretching it down the road. So, and I do believe that one of the tactics of Donald J. Trump is to let this thing play out. You know, he's using their numbers, he's using the things they created to say the economy is great, and then when it's going to crash, because it's not great, it's way, way overextended. And then when it does, and they can't say the numbers he's given is false because he's using their method of accounting, the ones they created to lie to us. So they're not going to call him out on that. So when the Fed keeps raising the rates, and eventually they're going to crash a lot of businesses in the stock market, I think he's planning at pointing at the Fed and saying, look what they did to us. Time to leave the system. Well, that's going to be very interesting, and it's going to be, you know, up to us to stick together as a people and give him the mandate of the people, as it were. You know, of course, the mainstream media is going to tell you he's crazy and he's this and he's that, and they've really stepped that up. I mean, I would just turn that stuff off because I don't even know who's paying attention to them anymore. But look at this. This seems to be the year of the winter. Just so I'm just saying, look out. I don't have a crystal ball, but according to, you know, all the writing that's on the wall, it looks like this is going to go down soon. And as far as I'm concerned, the sooner the better. Let's take our medicine and get it over with, and get things back on track again, and stop this baloney that they've been doing for so long, printing money, kicking the can down the road, and bailing out big business. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see if we get any money back from these guys that have stolen trillions of dollars out of our coffers. But I don't believe that's going to happen without some pain. So just be forewarned, you know, and prudent, and try to keep your debt low and keep some stores on hand. I mean, I know people say, oh, gold and silver, but look at Gold and silver are great, but when you're hungry, you can't eat them. More important to have some food on the shelf and some firewood in the shed. You know, gold and silver is for the other side when maybe it's time to start rebuilding again. But, you know, I'm just mentioning it to bring some prudence into people's minds here. And, you know, like if you haven't done that, you should do it now, right? Because I think, you know, by January 1st, you're going to see some major, major movements. So all we can hope is that, well, we know God's in control, but all we can hope is that he's not decided to chastise us too bad for the things that have happened in this country. And, you know, everybody, you know, there's so much evil that goes on out there. But, you know, in the Bible, you see where one man has proclaimed the true God, and God has spared that nation and that country. So that's what I'm hoping for, because it seems like that's what's being declared now. And I'm going to rest in that. And so if there's nobody else, I'm going to end the call now. And we'll be back next week. Same time, same place. And good call. Lots of good participation. And we'll move forward next week. So have a good night, everybody.